Hey, it's a Schilling Show. News, analysis, commentary, and insight. The phone is open, and the numbers are 977-1070-434-977-1070 if you happen to be calling from outside of our general listening area. David Murata is the president of Murata Wealth Management and joins us here every month for interesting conversations on topics that will be relevant to you regarding finances and the economy. He's online at MurataOnMoney.com. And David, welcome back to the Schilling Show. Great to have you here.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Okay, just a quick comment, as you and I discussed before the show today, that the United States has now fallen out of the top 10 list of most economically free countries. And the reason I bring it up is because many people have heard us over the years talking about this list when it comes out. And, you know, 10 is just a number. We've bumped down to 12 now, but it is disturbing to think that there are all these countries that are ahead of us in economic freedom.
Yeah, I think it was 3 years ago we dropped out of the free category into the top of the mostly free category, and now we're continuing to slide as I think government policies make it harder and harder to actually build and maintain real wealth. We recommend at Murata Wealth Management to invest in countries that have the most economic freedom and the lowest debt and deficit, because those are the ones that generally have good economies and good stock markets. And over the years, we've done some analysis, and historically over certain time periods, the countries with the most economic freedom beat the EFI World Index by about 4.5%. And that's significant in the investing world. And you can just imagine that by imagining, would you rather invest in companies in North or South Korea?
South Korea.
Right. So, yes. So South Korea is freer than North Korea, and a company in South Korea will do better. And the soil in which a company is planted matters even more than where it sells, because where it's planted, it will get those tax policies. So if you have a bank in Hong Kong, you're liable to pay a corporate tax rate of 15%. And if you have a bank in the United States, you're liable to be paying a top corporate tax rate of 40% federal.
Ouch.
And then you start adding on top of that all of the other tax rates. So we have the highest corporate tax rate in the world. And even countries like Sweden end up challenging us in terms of economic freedom. Sweden has very, very high personal rates, but the corporate tax rates are much lower. And so they're better on a number of points. And so it's difficult to tell which countries are the best. And the genius of the Heritage Foundation is they have 10 different measurements of economic freedom, and all 10 of them matter. And so they're a great measurement where you might not think Canada is great because of its socialized health care. It's good on other measures and, in fact, better than us. And now we're emulating the one thing that they're bad on.
David Murata is our guest. 977-1070 is the phone number. We're talking today broadly about preparing for the coming financial apocalypse. And I put that in quotes because I want to find out what David thinks, if it actually is coming. But we hear an awful lot of discussion about it. We've had many guests on this program who say, you know, with the kind of printing, quote unquote, of money we're doing, the inflation of the money supply and so forth, the dollar will be devalued to such a significant place that in the yuan or some other currency may take the world standard currency, and it would cause a great collapse here and maybe around the world. So, David, I guess the first question is this actually coming?
We did a blog series recently. It was 7 blog posts on advice from one of the disaster predicting videos. And what amazed me is how bad the financial advice was based upon, you know, these doomsday scenarios. And while I agree with a lot of the analysis of what's wrong in the country, I don't necessarily agree with the financial advice. And in fact, out of the 7 pieces of financial advice, only one was a good idea, and it was a better idea if the world wasn't ending than it was if the world was ending. And one was sort of neutral, and we supported it, at least a portion of it. But I think what most people feel is they feel that the idea that the Fed printing money can't go on forever. And if you know enough about what the Fed is doing and what it actually means, you realize that the Fed could go on forever. So I don't think a doomsday scenario that at some point the truck will hit the brick wall and it won't be able to go on any further. What the Fed is doing in quantitative easing is the Fed is buying treasury bonds. And what that means is they take this note that's floating around in the economy and they take it out of circulation, and instead they throw dollars into circulation. So it's the equivalent of printing money. It's taking all these notes that are out there and just giving people money instead. And I forget the exact number, but I think it's like $38 billion a month is quantitative easing. So you can think of quantitative easing as the Fed is printing $38 billion a month. And if they continue that long enough, they can pay off the $17 trillion worth of debt. So the Fed is very slowly paying off the $17 trillion worth of debt simply by buying all these bonds, which are our debt, and throwing cash out there.
But I thought our debt limit keeps getting increased.
It does. So the debt that the Federal Reserve is holding counts as our debt, even though the Federal Reserve is holding it.
Mm-hmm.
But at some point in the future, some administration will say, hold it. We owe this probably by then $30 trillion, mostly to ourselves, to our own Federal Reserve. Why don't we just let the Federal Reserve cancel the debt? And so by quantitative easing, they're printing the money to cancel the debt. Now we as a country are going to own all of this debt, and we're just going to say, hey, why don't we just forgive ourselves, and now we won't have any debt. So instead of a doomsday scenario, it is a very slow, we're devaluing the currency. And by very slow, I mean $38 billion isn't quite enough to cover a $17 trillion debt. But it makes a big dent in it, and it makes a big dent over time. And in, you know, in a year, we can cover maybe a half $1 trillion. And so if we keep doing this, we could continue to buy it back even more and accelerate quantitative easing, and that would devalue the currency even more.
Okay, so many people may be listening now, and I saw somebody who wrote into the Daily Newspaper the other day who thought this was just a brilliant approach. And that all of the supply side folks and those who were opposed to the quantitative easing were wrong. And so we've got about a minute here to at least get started on that. Great idea?
Well, it's certainly an idea that hurts the poorest members of society the worst, because a poor person is not engaged in the stock market where the values can go up higher than inflation. A poor person is trying to save using dollars, and it's a tax on anyone who's stupid enough to be holding dollars while they're doing this.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't recommend keeping more in dollars, cash, or bonds, more than you need for immediate withdrawals for the next 5 to 7 years. So we're very aggressive on stocks. And a lot of people are saying, well, the economy must be doing really well because the United States stock market is up so much.
Yes.
And really, we're working on an article right now for this Sunday in which we're talking about how there's two reasons that will push the stock market up. One is corporations making more profits, and the other is inflation. So the government underreports inflation. Inflation is running much higher than we think it is. And that's helping to push the stock market higher because the stock market is real value, and dollars are a fiat currency that's being devalued by quantitative easing by billions of dollars every single month. And the second thing is that with unemployment, the unemployment numbers are much higher than they look. They were reduced this year to 6.7% from 7% just this month, and yet most of that is people giving up. And it's corporations laying people off that actually helps increase their profits. So the economy isn't doing well, even if the stock market is.
David Morata is our guest. 977-1070 is a phone number. We're talking about preparing for the coming financial apocalypse, things that you should or should not be doing. And The Shilling Show will continue with David and you, 977-1070, right after the news. It's a Tuesday edition of The Shilling Show, and we do welcome you. David Morata is our guest. Coming up in hour number two, Ken Boyd will be here. We're continuing to talk about this article that David wrote, and it had to do with, you know, how should you prepare for this quote-unquote coming financial apocalypse, and it went viral. It wound up on the Drudge Report. And before we get into some of the specifics of what you've been writing about in this series, I want to ask you about how it was that you got all of this national and international attention. And really, I think in talking to you off the air, a lot of it was off track. In other words, it wasn't really what you said, and you were even portrayed as, what, a Wall Street advisor?
Yeah.
Is that the term?
It was a Wall Street expert. In each subsequent article, I got more important and lived in a different place. And so it was very interesting to watch yourself be portrayed in the national news and realize that a lot of the facts were wrong. Yeah, the series was a series basically saying it was responding to advice in a doomsday video saying, you know, if this financial apocalypse is coming, you know, well, the first one was buy as much gold as you can get your hands on. And I thought, you can put your entire net worth in gold. It's mm-hmm. not hard to get. You just buy it. And so our recommendation was, you know, don't buy as much gold as you can get your hands on. Mm-hmm. Instead, limit your investments in gold and silver to 3% of your portfolio mm-hmm. at the most, because it's just not a great investment. It doesn't return enough, and it's very volatile. So each one we were sort of taking on the advice. But number four was their advice was stock up on food, water, and guns and ammo or something like that. And we said, well, you know, being prepared is not bad. Here in Charlottesville, we had a snowmageddon, and we were without power for 3 weeks. We had a microburst that laid down all the trees like mm-hmm. a bomb had gone off at Barracks Road. And we had, you know, and so we've had a number of things like that, and it happens regularly. We had an earthquake, of all things, that devastated yeah. homes at the epicenter. And you know, most people don't realize that because it just rang the entire East Coast. So being prepared is a good idea. I'm not a diehard prepper, but I like everyone around me to be a diehard prepper to take care of me during times like that. So it's not that I'm you know, a doomsday scenario, but I just think having some kind of preparation is a good idea, and I hope everyone around me is prepared and will take care of me well. So, but in that one, I did say that, you know, food and water is sort of a bare minimum for a disaster and lasting 72 hours. But if you want guns and ammo, what I said in my article was, you know, there's two dozen things that come before guns and ammo. You know, there's medical supplies for mm-hmm. whatever prescriptions you're on for 2 or 3 weeks. There's being able to take care of your pet, to have enough, you know, pet food stored up so that your pets aren't starving. It just goes on and on like that. A generator is certainly, I think, before guns and ammo. But guns and ammo are on the list. Mm-hmm. And we even did an article at one point, are you safer if your neighbor has a gun? And the answer is yes, you are. It's better to have a neighborhood in which some people are going to have guns so that people breaking into your house don't know that all law-abiding citizens will not have a gun.
Mm-hmm.
So gun laws that restrict guns from people, I think, actually make them less safe. Well, that particular one went viral, and the headline, it first went viral when it was published in Paul Bedard did something in the Washington Examiner. And his headline was, "Be prepared. Wall Street advisor recommends guns and ammo for protection in collapse." So I was a Wall Street advisor. I was recommending guns and ammo, not saying, you know, there's two dozen things before them in protection in a collapse, because somehow I thought, you know, and he quoted me in the article, and he said, I don't think a collapse is imminent. I think a much more slow European malaise as we do. Print money and have poor economic regulatory environment and Obamacare and all the other things that people are worried about. Well, Drudge picked that up, and he, you know, the headline above the Drudge banner was Wall Street advisor recommends guns, ammo for protection in collapse. And from there on, the blogosphere just sort of went crazy. And I think my favorite title was Run for the Hills. Top financial advisor sees imminent collapse of U.S. civilization.
Oh, my goodness. It really blew up. So it's like the game of telephone we used to play as kids, you know.
You know, and it seemed like the sensational headlines garnered a lot of traffic. Drudge sent a lot to the Washington Examiner article, which sent a lot to our corporate website, which sent a lot then to Murata on Money. So the trickle-down effect meant that at Murata and Money, we had, over the course of a few days, we had about 30,000 hits. Mm. And it slowed our server down, which was sort of the sad side. I realized that we're not set up for going viral in terms of our server support. But it did generate a lot of traffic. And I think we've gotten 250 new subscribers to the blog, you know, because of it. And a couple of calls from people as far as, you know, San Francisco and Texas and Colorado who are interested in our services, I think because when people come to our website, they read usually on average about 7 articles.
Mm-hmm.
And after reading 7 articles, you get a good feel for who we are and what we're like. And a lot of people are very worried about the economy, and they want someone who understands their worries, but they want someone who has better advice than bury all your money in gold in the backyard. And so I think that's what we offer. We offer a firm that has the same concerns, but much better financial advice in terms of how to build real wealth.
Well, it's a wild ride, and maybe someday you'll write a book about this whole thing, because it was sure interesting to watch as I saw several references in my email inbox from various news sources that all went back to that original story. Hey, Greg is on the line, and Greg, thank you for waiting. You're on with David Murata. Go right ahead.
Hey, David, I like what you're saying. I think that this administration wants to confiscate our guns, so we'll have the jackboots come confiscate them anyway and put us in gulags. So anyway, as far as our 401ks, there's conspiracy theory that eventually they'll confiscate those as well and redistribute them to others and you out of your own accounts. If we keep moving toward this leftist regime, there would be ways to tax them down to nothing. And the other thing is some years ago I refinanced to get my house on a 15-year note at a lower rate just so I could get paid off. And I bought a piece of plant and equipment for my business. So I'm stretched to the limit right now, and it makes me really nervous. And I just say, what say you on those things?
Well, great. Yeah, Greg, thank you. And that does tie into one of the points that you were making here. Because a lot of people have said, and they've heard financial advice from people like Dave Ramsey, hey, pay off your mortgage. That's the new BMW is a paid-off home mortgage. It's the status symbol. How do you respond?
Yeah, there were two different items in the video that we saw. One was to get out of debt. That was number two. And number four was to pay off your home mortgage. Getting out of debt is always a good idea, and we said it's much better advice if civilization is continuing than if it's collapsing. If you have credit card debt and in the end of the world as we know it, you will not have to pay it. Yeah, you win. Exactly. you got to have all that stuff, and no credit card company is going to be able to come and take away your stuff in the zombie apocalypse. The number four was paying off your home mortgage. And we actually think it's better to have a 30-year fixed mortgage, as those are historically at these historically low rates, because it's a great hedge against inflation. So I am actually leveraging myself a little bit more. Simply, I could pay it off, pay cash for it, or I could get a mortgage for it. But simply to try to stretch a 30-year mortgage, or even a 10 or 7 or 15-year mortgage, in order at these historically low rates. Because if you think about a 30-year mortgage, if you had, say, $300,000 at a 30-year mortgage, and you could either have it for 30 years, $300,000, at these rates, you might pay $450,000, $500,000 for that. But if you have $300,000 invested in the stock market, if it just makes 7%, then it doubles up every 10 years. So $300,000 becomes $600,000, becomes $1.2 million, becomes $2.4 million. And $2.4 million versus the $500,000 you'd have to pay it off is a huge difference. And so keeping invested in the stock market over 30 years, that $300,000, versus paying off a mortgage, I think it's much better to keep invested in the stock market. Now, having said that, every millionaire I know who went bankrupt because they took that to the extreme and they leveraged themselves too much, and they only had about 5% equity and 95% debt. And then when the housing mortgage goes, when the housing prices go down, you're too heavily leveraged and you're insolvent and you can't pay it off. So there is a point at which you're leveraged too much. But for one person, for their home residence, I think having a 30-year fixed mortgage is a brilliant idea. Having said that, we have a lot of clients who don't want to have a mortgage at all, and the peace of mind of having it paid off is worth $1 million. And so they just have their mortgage paid off, and they don't worry about trying to leverage and keep it invested in the stock market.
977-1070 is the phone number. Our final segment with David Murata. When we get back on the other side, I want to talk about some of the other things that have been discussed regarding the coming financial apocalypse. One of them is getting out of the city. Should we wait until after the crash to invest, and as much other information as we have time to get to on the final segment this hour with David Murata. Stay tuned. Final segment with David Murata here on The Shilling Show. 977-1070 is the phone number. All right, so we neglected one area, and that's 401k. So let's talk about what people should be doing there.
Yeah, every year the socialist Democrats in Congress propose taking away everyone's 401k and IRA and giving them, a government Social Security supplement in its place. And it scares the right. And the libertarians, every time they do that, I don't think that's serious enough. I think it's trying to soften up the beaches to make it more serious in 20 or 30 years that this proposal would be taken more seriously. I don't think it's serious in the imminent future. So, and that's why I'm not too worried about it. Also, the Democrats are supported by trial lawyers who have huge 401ks. And so I don't think even the Democrat supporters would go for that as much. But one of the things that this whole sensational headlines did show me is that there is much less support for the government than there has ever been in at least my lifetime and probably in national history. Traditionally, the Democrats have less support for the country, and the Republicans are, you know, this is my country, right or wrong. The Republicans now just want to throw the country under the bus and say, we don't agree with any direction that the country's going. And we're almost, it was almost as though some were hoping that the civilization would collapse because it was the only way to get the onerous government regulations and creep out is if we could just start over. Maybe mm-hmm. we could have a new American revolution and wipe the slate clean and get back to a much simpler government that's doing what it ought to be doing. So there's very little support for government. And I think that's a little bit frightening. And if there's any piece where I would agree with some of the sensational headlines, it would be that a combination of lack of support for the country and unrest over unemployment would be the two factors that would create a situation a little bit like Greece, where you have a neo-Nazi group that's doing a better job of running the country, but mm-hmm. they're just scary. And they're running the country in many places better than the government is. And then the government workers and everything rioting in the streets and burning things because they don't want their government pensions cut. And that's the kind of unrest that I think people are worried about in the United States. And unfortunately, we're actively swimming toward those approaches. But even there, I think that the United States will do what the United States has always done best, and that is to find a compromise. The reason why Obamacare is so unpopular is because not a single Republican voted for it, and there was no compromise. And that's the difficulty with Obamacare. It's terrible legislation, poorly implemented, and really should be repealed, and we need to go back to some kind of a market approach.
David, you know, a lot of people are looking at this and saying, well, the stock market is due for a tumble, a major correction. We've seen it happen before. It could easily topple with another terrorist attack on the homeland or some other incident that happened. And so people say, well, maybe I should just hold back, hang on to my cash, and then get into the market after it crashes. I'd like you to respond to that.
Yeah, that was number six. It was like, get ready for the greatest buying opportunity of your lifetime. And I would say the greatest buying opportunity of your lifetime is always now. Start mm-hmm. saving, but not only saving and investing. Because if you're just saving, you're putting it in cash. Saving and investing is better. If you're worried about the U.S. stock markets, there's at least six countries with more economic freedom and lower debt and deficit. And we do a lot of foreign investing, especially in Hong Kong, Singapore, Australia, New Zealand, Switzerland, and Canada, which are all above us on the Heritage's Freedom Foundation Index, or at least they have been in past years. And then some of Northern Europe is better than Southern Europe. So the Nordic countries, Norway, Sweden, Denmark, Netherlands, Germany, are all better than the Southern countries. And they're sucked down by the euro at times, but also at times they're good. If the stock market corrects, I wouldn't be surprised if it corrected 10%. If it corrects more than 10%, I'll be a little bit surprised.
Mm-hmm.
But if it doesn't correct at all, I wouldn't be surprised either. The forward-looking P.E. ratios are 16. Historical average is around 14, so it's a little bit above, but it's not a lot above. So if you wanted to underweight U.S. stocks. But we have a saying, and that is, it's always a good time to have a balanced portfolio. And a balanced portfolio tries to mitigate some of the country-specific risks by being invested in a lot of different countries. And I think that's the best way to go. Most people have a lot in the U.S. If you had a lot in the U.S. this year, you made out like a bandit. If you have a lot in the U.S. the year before, you did okay. And if you had a lot in the U.S. the year before, then you know it goes back. And last year, in 2013 was one of the first years the United States really sailed ahead of every other country, and it was good. We invest a lot in the United States. I wouldn't shy away from the United States, but just the mere act of rebalancing means you're selling the U.S. gains and you're putting it in a lot of places that didn't do as well, like emerging markets or real estate or something like that.
So as we look at all of this, and we've got just about a minute and a half left, it was interesting to me that you talked about people wishing that this would just come tumbling down so we could start over again and simplify. And I think there are a growing number of people in America who really long to live in free states again. Do you see at some point in the future that people would start self-segregating in this way and that there would be freer places to go? Because there's really nowhere else left in the world, really, for Americans to go and be free.
The best possible political idea that I've heard of, actually we came up with it internally, was to simply put a poll tax on all of the states. So whatever the federal government wants to raise, they don't tax people directly. They put it onto all of the states and let the states raise that money any way they want. So if the states want to have an income tax exactly like the United States income tax, that's great. If the states want to have a consumption tax, they can have a consumption tax. If they want to have a poll tax, they can have a poll tax. And just a poll tax is just taxing every head. So everyone pays their fair share. So they can be as progressive as they want. They can be as fair and equal as they want. And then it would be up to the states to be able to have the freedom to compete on how you ought to collect taxes. And that way people could self-segregate, and people who don't want an income tax would move to a state that doesn't have an income tax. Maybe they have a consumption tax. And people who want to do something else would move to a different state. And every state would still have to raise those resources. So if they drove too many people out of the state, they couldn't raise those resources. And then they'd all pay their fair share to the federal government. And that would give both states and populace a great incentive for figuring out how to do taxes better than we do it. And it would give us, the states, a great incentive for lobbying for lower federal spending because they would have to raise that money somehow.
What a brilliant idea, and boy, I wish that would come to pass. David Morata is online at moratonmoney.com. What a valuable hour this has been. Share it with your friends. Available on podcast very soon. Just go to shillingshow.com. David, thank you so much for joining us once again on The Shilling Show.
Thank you so much for having me. Yeah,
I appreciate it, and that is good information for you. All right, it's 12:56 here. We'll have open phones at the top of the next hour. You can get in line right now. I'd love to hear from you. The phone lines are open at 977-1070. Ellie is standing by. You can also send me an email, robs@wina.com. And we'll be right back with more of The Shilling Show.